Welcome to Tech Transforms, sponsored by Dynatrace. I'm Carolyn Ford. Each week, Mark Snell and I talk with top influencers to explore how the U.S. government is harnessing the power of technology to solve complex challenges and improve our lives.
Hi, thanks for joining us on Tech Transforms. I'm Carolyn Ford here with Trace Bannon. Hi, Trace.
Hello, hello, hello.
I'm so excited to talk to you today about this. We've already talked a little bit and we're going to dig in just a second on the latest So What episode. Today, we are welcoming Hillary Coover, who is a technologist and one of your fellow reporters contributing to the It's 505 podcast, which another plug here for 505, guys. It's a great like McDonald's size reporting of what's going on in cybersecurity. I usually listen to the Fridays, but it's every day, right?
We've pulled back temporarily to Fridays. And okay. So if folks want to catch us on Friday, head to your happy hours while listening to Point of Views. It is 4 to 6 of us all giving a very different take on the same topic.
Yeah. So, and it's only like 10 to 15 minutes tops. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so then you can go dig in to topics that you are really crazy interested in, which is what we're going to do today with Hillary, because Hillary's been reporting on election fraud. And we're going to focus on the latest news surrounding the election security and disinformation, which we've already been talking about. Well, Let me just back up and say, hi, Hillary. Welcome to Tech Transforms. So What?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, like clearly I'm excited to talk about this. And Trace already got me going. I mean, you saw how she can just get me worked up. Because I saw over the weekend this really beautiful video, Billy Joel, Turn the Lights Back On video. If you guys haven't seen it, going to put the link in the show notes. It is gorgeous. And it takes you through the decades of Billy Joel's career, him singing this song, Turn the Lights Back On. And it's a video of him through the decades, or so I thought. Trace, go ahead and tell him what you did to me.
Well, I explained to you that and there's too much consistency. There is no splicing together. And this is a brand new song. So it's all AI. It is. And it's beautiful and it's well done and it's impressive.
And we stopped talking to have Hillary go watch it for a second. Hillary, mm-hmm. if you hadn't known right from the get-go that it was AI, what would you have thought you were watching?
I probably would have thought the same thing. I mean, because I went into it thinking, okay, I need to find the inconsistencies. I was looking for, you know, buggy eyes, funky eyebrows, lip syncing inconsistencies, you know, that sort of thing. But I knew going into it. So it was hard to spot even knowing going into it.
So yeah. And so it really drives home the point of what AI can do with this election cycle. I mean, it was already happening. You were reporting on it in 2016, Hillary. But I mean, for me, like, why would I not trust that video or believe that video was a spliced together video of Billy Joel? I'm a Billy Joel fan. I didn't recognize the song, but I was like, it's just an obscure song that maybe I haven't heard before. And there is no way I would have ever considered that video AI. And tell Trace what you said.
Well, think about why it got you. It's because you believed that there was a connection or a consistency because you've been a fan, because you've seen so many times, may have gone to concerts. So you have, your brain already has a whole set of preconceived notions, mm-hmm. right, about this. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it harder to fake these things. But I just had a video played for me and the person I was talking to live, who's really amazing with all of these generative technologies, immediately switched over and he showed the recording and showed him speaking German, then showed him speaking Japanese, then showed him speaking in Obama's voice, then showed him speaking as, but it actually refixed his lips. So I was looking for the telltale, you know, like when we were really little kids and you'd watch Godzilla, right, and like the mouth would move. Yes. Right. Yeah. You'd see that craziness. That's not happening anymore. So there's, it's going to get even harder when you don't have a relationship with somebody. There is no preconceived, whether it's a fan relationship or a real human relationship, it's going to get even harder. Like, have you seen some of the influencers on TikTok and Instagram that are generated? There are some that are getting some pretty big footprints now.
I saw the one, like the Tom Cruise one, but it was a couple of years ago and you could tell, like, it was very good. But as soon as I started watching, I was like, oh, that's a deep fake or it's AI generated. Mm-hmm. That Billy Joel one though, man, you're right. Like, my brain wanted to believe, my brain knew what I was looking at. And then you blew my mind again. Mm-hmm. So Hillary, I want to bring this around to, well, bring this into the presidential election and ask both of you, starting with you, Hillary, what are some of the top concerns that you're hearing discussed in terms of election security this year?
I mean, for the most part, there are a lot of concerns, as there are every election. Misinformation and disinformation they're not new. The spread of that is certainly not new in the context of elections, but the AI technology is exacerbating the problem, and we as a society are not keeping up with our adversaries. And you know, social media manipulation, phishing and social engineering attacks enhanced by AI technologies are really really stressing the system and stressing the election integrity. So it's a tough situation. I think CISA is doing a good job, as are other influencers in the space, of getting campaigns out to inform the public on what's going on and what to look for and to be vigilant. Do I think they're doing as well as they should, as they could be? Maybe not, but, there's room for improvement for sure.
Well, let me ask you a question about that.
Yeah.
So I go for my morning walk with my husband. We walk a couple of miles and we debate. Like, so you can imagine I start my morning just like writing at it. And we were talking about this. We're talking about, how do you police this? How do you analyze for it? How do you help? Because we saw the last election cycle, we could argue about what was misinformation and what wasn't. We could argue back and forth about lockdowns and what was real information and what was not, because some of it was just decided by platforms. How do we avoid, right? How do we actually solve this? Because saying everybody be aware, well, I can tell you that Carolyn is very aware of cybersecurity. I've been scaring the bejesus out of her for a year or two now. So she's aware, and yet, what is she going to do? What would she do? What's the average person do when the fake is getting so real? What are the other tells that you can look for, other than trying to figure out if the hair is parted the wrong way?
I mean, don't get your news from social media. I'm sorry.
Well, what about the fake calls from Joe Biden to
that was scary. Right? And that's, you know, I mean, other instances are going to happen where criminals are going to be impersonating legitimate sources to try to suppress voters in that case, or steal credentials, spread malware. I think, considering the popularity of that news story, how far it got out and how fast it got out, I mean, the damage was definitely done. But I think valuable lessons were learned for the presidential election, because they said, okay, if this stuff is going to happen, here is what we need. We need to expect it to happen at this point. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, let's come up with some ways of addressing this even faster than we did the actual incident. Is the execution of it going to be perfect? Maybe not.
Well, and you know, I thought if I were one of those people that received that call, oh, I sure would have flagged it as fake, because that just doesn't make any sense for Joe Biden to call me and tell me not to vote. Now, as those words come out of my mouth, I don't know how good the social engineering was. I didn't hear or read the actual message that was supposedly sent. And so I don't know, like, maybe if I had taken that call, it would have been convincing enough that I'm like, okay, there's some logic here that I'm like, okay, yeah, I see. Did either of you actually hear the call?
I did not.
Yeah, I did not. But I also don't answer
unknown, I don't either.
Under unknown numbers. So I probably wouldn't have been.
Right.
Yeah. Right. If you're not in my contact list,
same.
And even on my business phone, my separate phone, it's dicey. I have to know area codes. And even then, when I get them wrong, I'm pretty angry with people.
Yeah, same.
So mostly I go to voicemail and I'll call you back.
Yeah. But I think, like, one of the ways, Trace, to your point, and I love what you just said, Hillary, don't get your news from social media. And then another way, like, I just do a gut check for myself. Like I said, if I would have gotten that call somehow, I would have been like, this makes no sense. I need to go validate. And we're all so busy that this garbage comes at us and we get in this reactionary mode where this stuff can get us. And it's like, how do we know what to trust? I mean, how do we even know? Trace blew my mind again before we started recording when I said, at least I know that I'm talking to the real Hillary right now and I'm talking to the real Trace right now over Zoom. Like, I have.
Where are you?
Exactly. So I didn't know this was possible. Trace, let's go ahead and talk about what you did to me a second time this morning.
People are going to listen to this episode and they're going to think that I'm like this malicious kid pulling the wings off butterflies or something. No, I shared with you that there had recently been a scam that involved deepfakes. We can post the article so folks can see that in the comments. But essentially, they had multiple professionals that showed up for this meeting and only one of them was human, but they were named correctly. They were carrying out their roles and responsibilities. And what they were able to do was to have millions of dollars moved to different accounts that they can't get back anymore. So, you know, you're in there with your CTO, your CFO, you're there talking strategy, and you're the junior person, but it all seems reasonable. And it's not just one meeting. It's a series of meetings. And through that series of meetings, you eventually take the action that you've been asked to do and shazam, bang, money gone.
I still can't believe that. Like, I got to go read this story in depth because 200 million, talking to people you think you're talking to over Zoom and you, I, it.
So it looks like it was 200 million in Hong Kong dollars. It was 26 million.
Oh, US. Only 26. That's
only 26 million.
That's doable. Cool.
That's real extreme. That's high stakes. That's high stakes misinformation, disinformation, high stakes scamming. Think about how this is getting, you know, down into small potato things where you can't trust anything that you're doing anymore. I get text messages occasionally on my personal phone for something that's being shipped to me. And it'll say, here's the FedEx and it's on its way. Now, if it gives me a link and says, would you like to track this? I'm like, not going to click on that link. I recently did, just within the last 3 days, had one a text message that said, this is USPS. We don't have your complete address. Could you log in and give us the rest of your address? I'm like, really? Seriously? And all I had to do was look at the credentials of what was getting sent to me. Like the number it was sent from was like at Gmail. It's like Benji, somebody at Gmail.
Yeah, so what they're after is they're trying to get you to put in username and password, maybe even more personal information. That's what they're after. I've never clicked on one of those either. I get them all the time, regularly.
But you're starting to get text messages, random text messages.
Yeah.
I got one that was masquerading as though it was executive leadership in the company that I work for. And it was believable. What he was asking me to do was believable up until that third question. Because I'm always like, why would he text me? And then it dawned on me, I have two phones. then both of my phones use the same iCloud account, the same Apple account. So I get text messages on both phones. The key for me figuring it out was it was only popping up on my personal phone. And that person would have never had my personal phone number, not on my, but think about it. So sending out robo emails, robo calls, robo text messages. Have you gotten robo text messages about the elections?
Mm-hmm. I got them from Nikki Haley's been texting me.
Really? Well, that's interesting. I wouldn't expect her to text you.
Yeah, I was just going to say, in the context of elections, I get them all the time, to the point where and they try to get you riled up about an issue that they anticipate based on your demographic, your voting registration status and all that. And they try to get you riled up. So you want to click on something to be like, you know, yes, I will sign a petition for something. But if you open it up and you look and you're like, it's Benji at Gmail or some other, you know, scammy looking hyperlink or short link. So I never click on them. And every time I get one, I screenshot it and I send it to my mom. And I say, Mom, don't click on that.
Well, do you know what gets me riled up? Is I don't care who it is. Well, maybe Obama, he can text me. Probably Jane Goodall. But anybody else, I'm like, did I give you my number and tell you you could text me? I don't care who you are. Don't be sending me texts. That's what gets me riled up.
I feel the same way. Legitimate ones. I think they're all spam consent.
It's stepping over a line when it comes to text messages, because text messages are the most personal. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to use it for any kind of business context, I want them to ask me first. Mm-hmm. I'm okay that my doctor reminds me of my appointment by text, but I've agreed to it ahead of time. Other than that, if I don't know you, that's a personal machine that's strapped to my body at all times. You do not be texting that. No.
Well, so Hillary, you just a few months ago did a spot on 505 about cybersecurity stress tests. And I'm very interested to hear how that can improve election security.
I mean, stress tests simulate or attempt to simulate real world attacks and scenarios to identify vulnerabilities proactively. And so with the goal of staying ahead of attackers. And so there is the value in it. Is it perfect? No, of course not. But as we're able to monitor elections and election tampering worldwide, which Trace reported on, I think we are getting in an increased amount of data to be able to support these stress tests and help ensure the integrity in our own elections coming up. Mm-hmm. So
for the layman, I know what it is, but I'm just testing you. Explain what a stress test is.
It's a simulation. An example of it would be, the tabletop exercises are one format of them. And you can say, you can build out these scenarios based on actual events. For example, the Biden robocall. And you can say, okay, this happened and reached 15,000 citizens. What do we do? And what are the ramifications of everything? And what happens? What's the fallout? And you enact this whole scenario based on either something that's actually happened or something that could happen. And it's all with the goal of trying to think ahead of your adversary and be proactive about it. There are far more offensive and technical versions of stress tests as well. Trace would be far more qualified to speak to those. So I'll pass.
So you're actually testing the systems, like you're red gaming the systems?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The red teaming the system part, that would be more up Trace's alley, but like the actual simulations and creatively coming up with, you know, hey, based on what happened in India, let's design a tabletop exercise around that, or what happened over here. Like let's take in some information and try to be creative here and be as innovative or more innovative, hopefully, than our adversaries.
Well, and you know, to that point, there are a couple of different types of tests and simulations that we have to run. Like, so what Hillary's talking about is really getting after that, the simulation and understanding, emulating how that information gets out there. What's the likelihood that different people react in different ways to it? When we talk about stress testing of systems, for example, the voting systems, they are enlisting cybersecurity experts now to help them stress test these machines, meaning they put them under duress, they put them under stress. So the connection is not quite what it needs to be. What happens if things are going through really rapidly, if somebody tries to, you know, different, we call them attack vectors, if they try to come in through different attack vectors. So they're having security pros come at, because these originally, when these, not all systems are built secure by design. You'll hear me talk about this all the time. Hillary probably is rolling. No, you're not eye rolling. I don't see you eye rolling, but yes, I talk about secure by design all the time, because oftentimes as systems have grown over the years, we bolted on security as an afterthought, you know, and so we'll just, you know, kind of protecting things after the fact. They are now running these red games. They are doing, they're teaming to get after this and make sure that there's at least, if you go to where those machines are and you vote with that machine in that town hall or in that school or in that church or synagogue, what have you, that piece of it will be accurate. Now,
so there's two different kinds of stress testing, I think. You guys make sure I'm following. So Trace, when we stress test the systems, we're red teaming, we're white hat hacking systems. Okay. Hillary, like, we might do these tabletop exercises, stress tests, like disinformation, the whole Robo Biden call. You would come up with these different scenarios and then just talk them through. They're not necessarily IT systems or secure, you know, cyber, but they could be like it.
I think it's all important
because they're not separate. There's the social engineering part that flows into the systems for the stress testing.
Yeah,
am I just
We're tying it all together. So what Hillary's talking about is that forecasting where the threats are and simulating where the threats could be. There comes a point, not everything flows into a machine that's over at my town hall.
Right.
So if it doesn't, what does it look like if the information is coming, you know, are votes going to be swayed? That would be something that isn't necessarily going to happen at the machine level, but the votes could be swayed because of public opinion, right? Through those, all of those people getting their news, like Hillary said earlier, don't get your news on social media. Although I just popped a number out here that said that 86% of US adults get some of their news from their smartphone, computer, or tablet.
86%? Well, but that doesn't mean social media.
Yeah, that could be an app. Yeah.
Where do you, where's so, it start and stop?
Hillary, let's go where's back to the stop?
Because I can put comments at the bottom of every one of those CNN articles or BBC articles. I can put, it's become social.
Yeah, that's true.
Intersectionality peeps.
So Hillary, I want to go back really fast to what you talked about with disinformation. You basically said there's not anything we can do about it, other than know that it's going to happen and be as ready as we can.
Yeah. And I think honestly, there's also the nuance between mis and disinformation. Disinformation is a deliberate attempt to falsify information, whereas misinformation is a little different. But the and thinking about the motivation of whatever you're reading, like who benefits from some sensational story about, you know, a world leader or a politician or something like that. And thinking about, like, could this be, you know, an Iran-backed campaign or a Russia-backed campaign or a China-backed one, right? And so, and instead of looking at some of these things as you know, sowing, so like the sowing of discourse and polarization between, you know, Republican and Democrats, it's just so much of it is foreign influenced, and with the actual intent of you know, sowing discord, right? So
that's a really good thing to think about. Who benefits from this? And I go back to my mother not wanting to get the COVID vaccination because they were going to nano chip her. And I'm like, really? Who benefits from that, mom? Nanochip you to what end? Plus, you already have a pacemaker, so you're nanochipped.
We get into a very slippery slope of the continuum of truth nowadays. So there is no black and white truth anymore. There are shades of gray, because my opinions would be based on looking at the science that I look at, and what you look at may not agree with a third person looks at. So there's a selectivity to opinions now that is based on our social feeds. And Facebook, it's not a foreign, Twitter, X, not foreign, LinkedIn, not foreign. So
just echo chambers that yeah, we get ourselves.
They are, exactly.
But there are foreign camp influence.
Oh,
influence
true, true. Very but these are, but these
get
are
the echo
our
chambers going. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's, yeah. I struggle with what we need to do to those social media, with those social media platforms to combat it. Because there has been so much suppression of good information along with the suppression of bad information that I'm concerned about. And I mentioned this in my report on Friday. I'm concerned that in our effort to police things, that we're going to be suppressing as much good as bad.
Yeah, just this morning, there was an article about a couple of states that were looking to treat social media companies and the content published on those platforms in their at the state level, just like they would a utilities company. And so moderating to kind of taking ownership of content. And I don't know how that would work. I don't know if that will ever pass or come to fruition. Okay. But
you guys, can we start a book club? And will you guys read this book? It's called Ministry of the Future.
Ministry of the Future. It sounds interesting. I'm writing it down.
We need to circle back and talk about this book because it addresses the social media conundrum in a very interesting way. I would love to know what you guys think about this. And it's actually Obama said it should be required reading for everybody. It's kind of focused on the environmental problem, but as we all know, it's all connected. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So I sidetracked us for a second, but I'm serious. Like we're going to loop back to this and have a little book club episode. Tracy, I wanted you to talk about, you've done a lot of reporting on election fraud, like worldwide. So, which I would think Hillary's stress tests like feed off of, like, they're like, oh, this happened here. Let's see what would happen if we injected that same scenario in the US election system. So what are we seeing worldwide with election fraud?
Well, we just need to keep our eyes on what's going on in India for their elections right now. So deep fakes are out there and folks are not necessarily sophisticated. In cities, right, it's the same thing that we have here, where you have hubs, where you have good connectivity, good, you tend to have you're better able to discern it. But folks are not able to discern what's real and what's not real. And so, especially when you're talking about not two-party system, there are many, 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 many parties. When I was in India for their election in 2011, it was just amazing to see how many candidates there were, 15, 17 candidates, just like this amazing bifurcation. But as we've been talking about this today, it keeps coming back to me, and you guys are going to call me like, I don't know, call me crazy. I think we're getting back to the point where we need to see it with our own eyes, or we need to talk to people.
Scale, Trace? That's what I say. Like, we got to go back to our grandparents' era and talk face to face.
How did it scale before? Well, they went to church, they went to dinner, they went to communities, they had meetings, right? Those things didn't have to go away. They didn't have to go away. As a society, we kind of chose it because we started to get very insular, right? In our little circles. What do we call those cul-de-sacs? The cul-de-sacking of America. Mm-hmm. Four houses. We know the names of those four. We don't walk the streets anymore. We don't know folks. I'm wondering if we start to tie this in at a mega level, the breakdown of community has driven us to be online, more and more online. So we're engaging less. When was the last time you walked out of your house and talked to your neighbor about politics?
I mean, I try not to do that even with my friends because it can be really.
Yeah, I was going to say it's kind of a taboo topic now.
but it shouldn't be. It should be that I can say to Carolyn, anybody but Biden or anybody but Trump, and I should be able to say that, and then we can discuss. Well, why? Well, you know, I have this opinion about these events. This is my thoughts about border protection. This is what I've observed. This is what I've seen. And we should be able to have that dialogue, and you shouldn't hate me and hang up on me. And yet, people are now feeling as though they have to seek out, it's almost like you have this secret handshake. So I know whether or not it's safe to tell Carolyn what I actually think. What has happened that has driven us into such a hidey hole, hiding this way? And it's crazy. So I do believe we're going to have to, I don't know how it's going to scale. I don't know if it can scale, but I can tell you what won't work, what we're doing right now. I don't have any way that I have nothing that I can click on that will say this is valid. I don't have any engines that I can push things into easily as an average American that'll tell me, oh yeah, because I'm definitely not going to go to the Snopes website, and I'm not going to go out here to the fact checkers who label everything as fact or fiction, because we've seen over the last 3 years that those labels are not always equally applied. So I don't know. Where do we turn? Hillary. Young? What's the answer?
Young-ish. I don't have the answer. I mean, I you're right in that what we're doing right now is not going to work, but it's also the community and in-person engagements is also not going to scale. I don't foresee anybody changing this, moving too far from the status quo anytime soon because of the reachability of these platforms. And, you know, even with the risk of deep fakes and misinformation and disinformation, you still have a platform that can reach exponentially more viewers, readers. I mean, until the trust in that is truly broken among the public, which I don't think it is. And I think it's going to take a lot to totally break. I see us staying where we are.
Right.
Yeah. I agree that it's not scalable, but I'm still going to seek it out. And I think all of us have the imperative to start seeking it out. It is darn convenient to just flip my phone open when I wake up at 2 a.m. and scroll through the news and figure out, you know, what I'm going to do there. I do think another piece that we can take into consideration is as the elections come, everybody has an election place, a polling location. It will help us all if everybody who is able makes a really, really hard attempt to vote in person as opposed to through the paper ballots, because the paper ballot system and there have been duplicates printed. You can look up some interesting facts about Pennsylvania and what they did when they found out they had duplicates. Oopsie. We're going to see some misinformation, disinformation, voting fraud still there. So some of the simple old school things. If you can vote in person, make every attempt to vote in person. Try to not mail in a ballot. Remove that one extra layer of obfuscation from it.
And help your neighbors vote in person.
Absolutely. Know? Absolutely.
But what about, okay, because I'm just thinking this through and I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to go vote in person. I'm not going to go stand in line.
Really?
But what if, Trace, here's a compromise for me. What if I get my mail-in ballot and I take it to, I don't just put it in the mail. I take it to the voting station and I drop it there.
What have you saved yourself any steps standing in line to vote?
Well, yes, because it's the standing in line to vote.
Hmm. So I have early voting, early in-person voting.
We do.
So that could be distributed a little bit more. So you might be able to stand in line for 5 minutes instead of 5 hours.
Yeah. Okay. I like getting the sticker too. You know?
Oh man. So do I. It's on the back.
I get one in my mail-in ballot.
Okay. Jeepers. That's like you might get it out of a cereal box. That's right. Okay. That's right.
So for the people like me, that I'm being so honest right now, I'm going to get my news from 505. I'm going to get my cybersecurity news from 505. I'm going to get my, I mean, Are there, because that's a huge step to say we've got to, everything's got to go back to in-person. Like, yeah, that would be great. And like you said, Hillary, it's not going to happen anytime soon. Like there's going to need to be something drastic for that to happen. So what are some other things like that we can do?
Does it get to digital rights? Do we start to go back to digital rights management, right? This was a huge deal 15 or 20 years ago to make sure we understood where did that recording come from. If you had, and we used to call it, you know, you just rip your CDs, right? Not that I ever did any of that, ever, zero. But somebody would rip their CD tapes. And they might share
I
a
did
song.
All the time.
Oh, mixtapes. Yeah. Phew, you're sharing. You're sharing your age there a little bit. But yeah, so I don't know. Perhaps it is we need to find the science. My husband and I were talking about this, as we call him senior. Senior and I were taking a walk. We're like, does blockchain factor into this? Does digital right management factor into this? Like, is there a way that I can have, like, we just like we have certificates for authentication, right? Yeah. So is there a certificate that says this email actually came from Tracy? Or you know, are there, what other things can we do?
I remember the digital wallet thing. That was a big deal 20 years ago. In fact, I worked for a company that we worked on it. Or what about like the generative AI, like forcing source when AI spits something out, it's got to give you the sources for where this stuff's coming from.
That one is particularly hard, but you'll notice. You'll get it.
Data provenance is always hard.
Well, but it's even harder when you're talking about the mathematical statistic, right? It's the probability that two words are found together. And now we're talking about not, I mean, it's not sequential. We're talking about the reason that they say that they have all these billions and billions of parameters, how many connections between any one phoneme and any one other phoneme. So it gets really difficult to track it back to how many possible sources that were there. Now, if you use Perplexity, Perplexity.ai, it provides you all the sources. It tells you. And if you get something that doesn't have the source, you're like, oh, I'm going to regenerate that question. I'm going to ask it for sources on this. And then you start to go and check the sources. And some are dated and some are no longer valid, but at least you know. At least you know.
Yeah. So, okay. Sorry, go ahead, Hillary.
Oh, no. When Bard first came out, they had sources. And that was like kind of the difference between Bard and ChatGPT. And I was so excited about it. And I went to do a demo for somebody to, you know, get them excited about being able to see the sources. And then they took it away. And I was like, oh. I don't know if they've since re-added it with the rebrand and all that. But I was pretty excited when that came out. But yes, Perplexity is a great tool.
Well, so that'll take us down another rabbit hole. I'll just take a quick side hustle down this rabbit hole.
Uh-oh.
So in attempting to fix, right, some of this election fraud could be deep fakes and misinformation. Well, we could pivot and talk about bias and that a lot of the bias that people are talking about models, it isn't that some data scientist somewhere nefariously built in bias. That's not what it is. It's that the corpus of data that's being used to train. So if I train a model in the US and the majority of the people writing the newspapers are, and this is not true, but I'm going to say it, they're cisgendered white guys from New England, well, then the news is going to be biased towards
from their perspectives
and other, and from their perspective.
Yep. Absolutely.
What happens when we're trying to address bias? We just saw that. We just saw what happened with Google's Gemini over the weekend, where they had to take their model offline. Someone asked it to generate German soldiers from World War II, you know, and you don't have an African American or a Black Nazi. You don't have a Chinese or a Japanese, an Asian woman. All of the generations were incorrect when you asked for, you know, want to see the founding fathers of America, and they put in somebody who's obviously Asian, Indian Asian, as a founding father. So what they were trying to correct bias, but they forgot about what's called historic nuance. there's a whole lot of other crazy to consider things that we're going to have to understand, because some of the information that we're talking about, it could be that it's biased, that we're getting biased election information because a certain group of people just believe that because the corpus of data that the generative AI is getting trained from reflects a bias.
Yeah.
Less so nefarious.
I promised you both that I would end us before the top of the hour as much as I want to keep going.
We're having so much fun though.
Thank you so much for your time today, Hillary. Trace, always love talking to you, but this was super fun. We got to do this again.
Thanks
for having me. We definitely
do. Yeah. And also, everybody knows that like Hamilton is Puerto Rican, right? All right. Yep. Thanks. Thanks for joining us. Listeners, smash that like button, share this episode, and we will talk to you next time on So What?
Thanks for joining Tech Transforms, sponsored by Dynatrace. For more Tech Transforms, follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram.